StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, as well as the world's first internet radio station dedicated to startups and tech companies. We also have our Alexa skill go down here in the show notes. There will be a link to our Linktree link. It's linktr.ee/startupradio, and you'll find there everything you need about Startup Radio, all our social media, our internet feeds, internet radio, all our sub podcasts, social media, and so on and so forth. If you have not done so, make sure to hit the like and subscribe button wherever you're listening to this or watching this. Whew, that was a lot to say. Now I would like to welcome Thomas in LA. Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Jorn, I'm great. How are you?
I am doing good as well. And this time we are actually beating all the school pupils, all the students in California, because last time we tried this and at 9 a.m. your time, basically the internet just completely went dead and I did not even get an audio feed from you. So this time you're in the office and this time it hopefully works. As always, people can find you down here in the show notes, your LinkedIn profile, and I went through it. I've seen a lot of stuff you've been doing. You are originally from Ulm, the area around Ulm where you studied, and you then went on to the United States where you still live. We catch you here in LA in your office, right?
That is correct. Yeah, I'm actually in our office in Santa Monica. We're basically four blocks from the beach. Last week, as you mentioned, I was in my home office, which I've been working out for the last year, basically. And because of all the school going online around 9 a.m., I think the upload bandwidth, which it just went to zero. So I basically had no internet for an hour, and unfortunately, we couldn't do the call back then. Yeah. But yeah, as you mentioned, I started out in Ulm. I studied electrical engineering at University of Ulm. I worked for around 3 years in Germany out of Munich, first in an engineering role, and then later on I moved to business development and application support. And then in around 1998, I actually moved to the Bay Area. It was an interesting time back then. I was all the hype, all the internet was building up. I remember driving through the Bay Area where the Yahoos, the Alta Vistas, and the Lycos were still everywhere around. I think Google at that time was just raising their first 100,000 investments from Andy Bechtolsheimer and a little bit later from Jeff Bezos, working out of a garage in Menlo Park.
Basically, the names you just mentioned, Alta Vista and Lycos, they're so old. I'm afraid we have to put down Wikipedia links down here that some of the audience actually realize what they have been. Lycos was a type of internet portal, and I do believe Alta Vista was a very rudimentary version of what is today Google.
I think they were kind of both in search, but I agree. Yeah, I think what you said is absolutely correct. I just brought this up, I mean, kind of to show how long I've basically been in the U.S. And I was really amazed with the hype and I mean, just driving through all these famous companies, basically through Silicon Valley when you drive like from San Jose to San Francisco. I mean, that's just an amazing experience overall, I would say. Driving by all these billboards with all these very famous companies, and that's kind of why I kind of mentioned it. And yeah, Google was basically operating out of a garage, I think, out of Susan's house in Menlo Park. It's just, I mean, completely amazing. Fast forwarding 20 years or so, and obviously they've taken over all of Mountain View.
So basically, you've been doing you've been doing some marketing, apps, electrical engineering. Then you co-founded a company and another company, and then you ended up on as a venture partner with One Traction in the greater LA area. Can you take us a little bit along your journey there?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I kind of guess I got a little bit sidelined there. Thanks for reeling me back in off my memory lane. Yes. I worked in the Bay Area for like two, three years. Then I kind of decided I wanted to move south. So I moved still in a business development, merger and acquisition, and corporate strategy role. I moved from the Bay Area. I moved to Los Angeles. Actually, I had offices in Irvine and Newbury Park, worked there for quite some time. And then around 5, 6 years ago, I started a company in the small and medium sized business segment, for managing customer interaction for retail customers. And a little bit later on, I was working on a social engagement and networking platform prior to joining One Traction, where I basically scouted startups for our corporate development program.
I was wondering, when you moved to LA, the rush hour and the bad traffic is legendary. You also get some piece of this action?
Well, yes, obviously the traffic is well known. Right now, the traffic has been pretty good. It's slowly reaching back pre-pandemic levels. I'm afraid. Luckily, I'm still working most of the time from my home office, so it's not impacting me. But at that time, yes, you have to learn traffic patterns quickly. You got to plan your meetings. You got to make sure you know which highway to go at what time and which highway not to go at which time. It is a challenge, no question. But you develop a kind of a sense to some extent where you can travel and where you cannot travel. I mean, now I'm basically based in Malibu. My home is in Malibu and my office is in Santa Monica. So even at the worst time, it shouldn't take me more than like half an hour. And we're talking basically about less than 6 miles along Pacific Coast Highway. But so some people say, all right, just jump on your bike. And I actually do that sometimes. It might be faster to travel along that route than taking the car. But you're absolutely right. The traffic can definitely be a challenge. If you want to move from the west side, Santa Monica, Venice, to downtown LA at the wrong time, you could be looking at 1.5 hours for a trip that should take 20 minutes.
Oh, yeah. My understanding is that this social media aggregator, was it something like you would know today as Buffer or ThinkOwl? Or was it more like a monitoring, less a posting tool?
Well, the social media thing, we did start it actually kind of what I consider like an aggregator. We started with the idea. I meet Jörn somewhere and want to connect with him on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, for example. And so instead of finding you on all those tools, you would use our app. We'll find you there, and I can choose which network I wanted to connect with you on the fly. This was a while back. All the APIs were still wide open, and obviously, social media companies realized pretty quickly that the biggest value they had was in the networking and the scales of their users. So Facebook, I think, was the first that released APO. They went from API 1.0 to API 1.1, I believe. And access to the connection and networking capabilities connecting to new people was significantly impaired. LinkedIn was the second one. So we moved away, pivoted quickly. You learn how important it is to pivot in life. If you realize something doesn't work out, you got to be flexible. You got to pivot. And so we pivoted towards more like a networking app instead of using business cards. I would basically, for example, meet you somewhere in person. Hard to imagine these days, but I remember times before COVID where we actually did have networking events where we would hang out and talk to people. And if we both had the app installed, The app would basically record that we've been in proximity for a certain amount of time. And then afterwards, you would be asked if you wanted to connect with me and basically send me some messages without actually doing to have my information. And the app would basically just recommend to do that based on proximity. It's kind of very similar to what the COVID tracing apps are doing this day. Back then, the Bluetooth wasn't as widely available, so we used GPS. But it's still quite similar to what you have today in the COVID tracing apps.
Mm-hmm. I see. And then at one point, you left the company and became a venture partner. That is pretty interesting for me, especially what type of investment philosophy did you use there? Did you have like a checklist you were going for, your gut feeling? How did you work there and how did it help you with your current position?
Sorry, clarify that. You want to talk about my current position or the one before?
If you like to, first the one before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a little bit different. You see, the company before, we were kind of more like a reverse pitch investor. So we would basically go to our corporate clients and ask them, what are you looking for? So we were working with corporate clients that might not have a corporate VC arm, and they might still have developing shortcomings in their R&D. And we would ask them, what do you need? What are you looking for? And then we would go out and scout for those startups specifically. So we were basically trying to find startup for specific corporate need. That's a little bit the other way around. I mean, what I'm doing now, obviously, we find startups, we found them, we invest in them, we groom them, make them pretty, make them unicorn capable, and then we try to raise money for them. Like one example, back then at One Traction, I remember one company that we worked that was doing like some cloud storage aggregation, which came very hard very later. But we had two or three corporate clients that basically looked for the same thing, and we were very successful finding them early startups that were doing exactly the management that you could basically use your Google Cloud, your AWS Cloud, and you could manage it, that you didn't rely on just the interface of one provider, but that you actually had the management capabilities manage multiple cloud services via one dashboard or one interface, which was very attractive to the customers we had at that time.
Mm-hmm. I see. And you already touched your current position of Expert Dojo. That's why we are talking today. And can you tell us a little bit what type of startups you guys are looking for, like in terms of geography, in terms of stage, like product, seed, investment stage, or in terms of the marketability of the product, or and what you guys are then doing with them?
Yeah, absolutely. Be happy to, Jörn. Expert Dojo is an accelerator, so we typically look for early stage startups. We are fairly technology agnostic. 41% of our investments have been into female founders, which is a big difference compared to some of the other accelerators that we are around. We mentioned earlier, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, we started looking mostly for local companies in the Santa Monica area. What they kind of call Silicon Beach. Not a big fan of that. But so 5 years ago, we were only looking for companies that were basically in proximity. But 2 years ago, we kind of decided we really wanted to reach out internationally to even areas where they might have less access to, first of all, the guidance, the capabilities. We have a strong growth and sales network in the United States. So now we're basically an international accelerator. We went 100% online 2 years ago, like a year before COVID basically forced everybody to move all their programs pretty much online. We've made around 100 investments in startups. Investment check size is typically 100K. There's some flexibility into that. We can can invest a little bit less for a little bit less equity. We are looking to deploy another 8 million for around 80 startups in our cohort this year. And we have basically almost completed our first cohort of the year, and we're going to start the second one sometimes in the April timeframe. So if that sounds interesting to you, feel free to reach out to me. We are going to obviously accept applications on an ongoing basis. We'll be running 6 cohorts this year. So there's basically almost always a new cohort starting very soon.
How long is such a program, and what could startups expect from this acceleration program? As you said, it starts out with some investment, some equity, but what do the startups learn during this time? And actually, how do you help them? How is the program set up? What do you teach those guys?
Oh yeah, that's obviously a great question. The program is typically around 10 weeks long. It actually goes like around 3 months, but there's maybe one or two breaks in between. We focus on 3 things: build, invest, and grow. So the first 5-6 weeks of the program is basically to really build your startup. And what do we mean by build your startup? You're basically looking at a unicorn vision. So we are only, if we invest in your startup, we do believe that you could become a unicorn within 2-3 years. And so we kind of work on the unicorn strategy. We look at what is your branding, what is your influence that you need, and what kind of digital marketing do you need to deploy to really get to this point. We see obviously a lot of programs out there for accelerators. They focus mostly only on the invest part, which if you have a somewhat decent idea, you pitch it in front of 1,000 investors, maybe it's going to stick once. That's not really our approach. We basically want to develop your company that the investors actually feel that they want to invest in your company, that they are actually worried. The fear of missing out is what is always the nice thing that happens, that the investor needs to feel, if I'm not investing in this company, I'm going to miss the next Facebook. I'm going to miss the next Google. Amazon. I'm going to miss the next Apple. And so we're really spending a lot of time. You have to learn and breathe. You have to learn to breathe and live your startup and your enthusiasm and your conviction that you're basically going to be the one that's going to make it. And I would say that as a German, I think that is something that I think a lot of people from Europe can benefit a lot from, because we tend to be very critical, and we tend to be very questionable, and we tend to not focus on the stuff that we can do. I tend to do that myself. We tend to focus on the stuff that we can do stuff. And we try to convince, or we convince people to focus on what they can do and what is possible. So that is the build part. Then the invest part is what you pretty much expect from any accelerator. It's called what is the outreach to investors. We call this Investors Hell Week. We'll have 5 demo days with like 20 investors each. Every startup is going to pitch in front of those investors. This year, this cohort, actually, we had at least 30 investors. So every startup basically pitched in front of 150 investors. In regards of success, I would say all startups have raised funding. I would say 80% of our startups are basically oversubscribed, and 20%, they still have a little leeway to go, but we haven't even completed the program. So extremely, extremely successful. You have to look at us or as a way how you can really increase your chances to secure funding. Obviously, we provide some funding, but we're really the tool for you to build a company that allows you to raise much more follow-on funding. And as you probably know, 98% of the companies don't even make it to the funding stage. So if you can just increase that percentage by 10% or whatever, double that chance, I mean, you're already golden. And that's what we're really focusing on, the second part of the program. And then the last 3-4 years is really on revenue growth, sales strategy, a little bit talent management, go to market, how you can scale up quickly. As I mentioned earlier, we really want to see our startups to be able to get to $100,000 revenue per month within 12 months after joining our program. And that's what our outreach team's focusing on, and that's what we want startups to be focusing on. If you have lots of revenue, you're going to get lots of investments. It's that simple. If you have a great idea, you might get some investments, but if you have revenue, maybe not profitable yet, but if you have recurring monthly revenues, it is so much easier to raise funding than just having a great idea.
I see. Like you said, you're investing in startups that you guys as ExpertDojo team believe in that could be unicorn. You're agnostic in terms of technology. What are you looking for? Like every startup can apply right now? Or do you already have, I assume, at least a scalable business model is a necessary ingredient? You will most likely look at startups who have already gathered a team, and then basically they can apply to you from all over the world?
Yes, absolutely. Almost all over the world. I mean, there might be some countries that are on embargoes list, but basically we do accept startups from all over the world. Our existing cohorts, we have, I would say 60-70% of our startups are coming from Europe. We got 25% are basically coming from North America. That includes US and Canada. We have a few percentage points coming from a few startups coming from Africa. And we have one startup that's actually coming from India. So the geographic region is very wide. Our program is typically run in the morning from 8 to like around 1 o'clock California time. So that startups that comes from India has a little bit of a problem right now in regards of the timing. It's basically really bad. All the sessions are recorded and available for startups in Europe or Germany that basically translate to a time. The programs happen somewhere from the early afternoon to the evening, late evening, maybe night, but it's definitely very doable. So region, definitely. I think we kind of covered. I'm not saying that having some small revenue is a must-have, but it's a very nice to have. So, I mean, if you do not have, but you think you launch, you think you'll have something very soon, that's obviously we really like to see. In regards of areas, I can just take a few examples of our existing cohort. We actually do have one CPG company in the cohort. We don't do that very often, but definitely we are looking at it. This is kind of in the healthy food and drink segment. So it's a little bit hyped right now. So that's why we kind of decided to do it. We have a couple of SaaS companies, we have fintech companies in Africa, and we actually do have some clean tech, including hardware, that are kind of revolutionizing the electric grid and the way that engines are effective, efficient in a way. So you can see it's a very broad range, and we spend a lot of one-on-one times with those startups in the programs as well to make sure that the outreach to the investors is really customized. Obviously, there's some investors that are completely technology agnostic as we are. There are others that are more technology centered. And we will do both to make sure that the startup really gets the best out of the program. The same applies to our growth team. There's a lot of things that apply broadly, but our growth team will work one-on-one with the startups and with our experts to really reach out to the relevant partners that are all over the U.S.
Just one question left for me. Do you have any startups that most people or at least a few people would know from outside the greater LA area? I know startups are usually like local heroes, and then it really fizzles out pretty fast to the very little niche they're serving, but maybe one or two are better known.
I frankly don't think that any of we haven't been doing this so long, so I don't think any of our startups are like the at the level that they would have a strong brand recognition. Definitely not our existing cohort. Those are obviously all early stage startups that are obviously doing have some traction either in their home country or do have a little home traction here in the US. Unfortunately, that's kind of why I came to your show, is we do not have any German startups yet. So I would, or German speaking startups. So I would definitely love to encourage everybody that works on a startup that is kind of in what we're looking for. I think we covered a lot of the startups that we're kind of looking to accept in our program. And it would be awesome if we could get a couple of German speaking startups, European startups into our program. We definitely would be looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm. I see. Everybody who would now like to learn more or apply, go down here in the show notes. There is a link to your company website, which is pretty simple, expertdojo.com. We'll have the link, and there you can find out more, including all the portfolio companies that have been members of the program. But I went through them, and actually I personally also did not recognize them yet, but as you said, you're pretty early. When did you guys start with this type of international program? I remember you said something like 2 years ago.
That is correct. We started obviously much smaller. Even every accelerator starts smaller, right? So I think up to today, we have done around 100 investments over the last 4 years. And I would say the majority of those probably came from the last 2 years. And as I said earlier, this year, we're looking to do 80 investments. So as you can see, we are really growing. So the team is growing quickly. And obviously, the number of startups we want to take in is growing as well. So yeah, 2 years, but we are growing quickly. And we're looking to find 80 startups this season. To take into our program, to take into our accelerator, and build the next unicorn with you.
And as you said, you're kind of a rolling program, so that means when one deadline closes, the next will be opening pretty soon. Do you have, like, from the top of your mind, like the next one or two closing dates that we can have here?
There's really no hard closing day. The next cohort starts somewhere in April. So obviously, I would say we need at least 2-3 weeks to do our due diligence. Obviously April is still open again, and there will be one in May, and there will be another one in June. And I think we'll even start one in July. I think then August there's a break. We have the dates. We have the dates on our webpage. Those dates are not set in stone. They're flexible. But as you mentioned, even the startup world is fast, but it's not so fast. So if you are a startup that considers moving their business to the U.S. or want to grow their business in the U.S., that's ideal. It's not necessarily 60% of our cohorts basically want to move to the U.S., but it's not necessarily. We have invested in other startups that have no intention to move to the US in the foreseeable future.
Yeah, that's what I also had in mind. That's why we're talking, because a lot of startups are looking at evaluating the US as a potential market. And then it definitely makes sense to also take in the expert knowledge, take in your network, and as well as maybe a little bit of investment. Thomas, was a pleasure talking to you. Sometimes we had a tiny bit of interruptions. It's one again, the school children wrecking a little bit havoc on our internet recording right now, but it's like leagues better than what we had before. It was a pleasure talking to you. We keep the guys up to date about you, and as always, you can find everything you need to know down here in the show notes.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Jörn, for having me. I really enjoy this.
Great. All my pleasure. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.